From Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, I'm Suzette Grelot, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. Welcome to Worldviews. Today, I'll talk with University of Oklahoma anthropologist and international studies professor Erica Robb Larkins. She's living in South America this year, researching how the city's favelas are being policed ahead of this summer's World Cup.
Are there going to be large-scale protests again outside of these World Cup stadiums? And how is the government going to handle that? And how is FIFA going to handle that? And those still remain unresolved questions.
And later, Rebecca Cruz joins me for our annual preview of the nominees for the Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film.
Omar, لما بدك تحرر بلدك وتقرر انك تثور.
This gives voice to the Palestinian people, and it's their own voice. And he commented that the more we hear that voice, the more peace will be possible.
These conversations are coming up after this hour's news from NPR. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grelot. Erica Robb Larkins, thanks for joining me today for the roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
So, Erica, you've lived a long time in Rio. Here we are in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. And you've lived here a long time, many years. You've been working here for many years. And so what an exciting place to be. I mean, obviously, as an outsider, as somebody who's been here for the first time, I can tell it's a vibrant place, super electric. I mean, obviously, we're heading into Carnival. So, you know, everything is really exciting. Lots of diversity, lots of activity. But I suspect that from what I read and what I hear and what I'm hearing while I've been here is that kind of an external perception or the way in which it's perceived by people who don't really know the city versus those who know it well, that there's kind of a gap there. What can you tell me about your perceptions or the internal perceptions of Rio?
Rio is an incredibly vibrant, Brazil in general is an incredibly vibrant, diverse, fascinating place and with, you know, an incredibly rich culture. And a lot of what you're seeing right now going into Carnival is all of this celebration, sort of these things that Brazil is known for. And that is very much true. At the same time, you have all of these complications, things that are, you know, challenges for people. But I don't think that it's that, you know, one is sort of the truth and the other one is not, but rather that that's the beauty of the contradiction of Brazil is in those two things.
Well, I like how you put it, kind of contradictions, because that's, I think, what you see. So let's talk specifics. So, like, in terms of economics and the way in which people live, for example, you can see very wealthy people living side by side, right, with people who are not wealthy or not even close to being wealthy, not even middle class. I mean, they're poor. So this is, I think, is this what you mean when you talk about the contradictions that you see in Rio?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. But it's not just wealthy neighborhoods next to poor neighborhoods. It's also inside the house, outside the house. So I think part of what has made Brazil's inequality famous is the fact that it's so striking, that you really do see mansions next to shantytowns, which is very different than in the United States, where poor people tend to be more invisible or put at the margins of a city. And that is the case in Rio also. In fact, most of the poor people in Rio and most of the Brazilian big cities live on the periphery. But here you also have these very famous areas called favelas that are right next to these wealthy areas. So you can see side by side the difference in the quality of living. What you don't see, though, is that sometimes within those poor houses, if you go inside of the four walls, you would find people that had flat screen TVs or computers or the kinds of luxury goods that we wouldn't really associate with the exterior of their houses. So there is also that contradiction between sort of the outside appearance and the inside reality.
I think that is such an excellent point, Erica, because, I mean, even in just my short time here, being here this week, I visited a couple of these favela communities, and I was amazed at how much, you know, how many things I actually had in these very small homes, these shanty towns, satellite television, satellites everywhere, flat screen TVs, cell phones, all of the, you know, sitting there on their laptops working. I mean, all of the luxuries that you would expect. So it's kind of, I guess, when you said that inside the house, outside the house. So inside their houses, life is better. They have stuff. They have things going on. But when you go outside the house, the roads, the electrical infrastructure, the education, healthcare, all of those things, that is still at question. Is that right?
Yeah, and I think that's really true. Brazil has been really celebrated in the last 5 to 10 years for reducing inequality. And there's this there's lots of publicity around what they call Classe C, which is the C class, which is this new middle class in Brazil. And these people that live in shanty towns and favelas are the people that form the most of this class for the most part. And so inside of their house, they might have the markers of middle-class consumption. But when you go outside of the house, they don't necessarily have that. There's not an infrastructure. There's not adequate transportation. They're often living in precarious situations with violence. So the issue of class is being defined almost entirely by your consumptive power and not about these other things that I think we think very much have to do with class. So I'm always a little suspicious of this classe C, which is, you know, a really big thing here now.
Definitely an interesting perspective on that. Well, I have to ask, I mean, the World Cup is coming to Brazil in just a few months. The spotlight is clearly on this country, on this city. 2 years later, the Olympics will be here. I mean, it's hard to imagine right now that this is going to come off well. I mean, the traffic is unbearable. You know, how are they going to pull this off in terms of the actual just logistics of it in this big city? But then security, I mean, the pacification process of the favelas, I mean, the criminal element, how are they going to do?
Well, I think that's the big question, and the question that has certainly been generating a lot of international press. Almost every day I get an article or see an article, is Brazil ready? To the point where I think Brazilians are pretty annoyed. They're tired of this, even if they might very well agree. In fact, one of the most popular sort of expressions here are the things that happen. You're in a cab and you're in traffic and you talk to the cab driver. You say, oh, the traffic is so terrible. And the refrain that everyone says is like, oh, imagine what it's going to be like in the World Cup. And so everybody knows that it's going to be difficult and chaotic in some ways. And the readiness question, I think, you know, is a very important one, but it's also one that has been hyped a lot by the international media because it sells more stories. And the government itself has been launched this campaign against this, which they're calling it like the Cup of the Cups. It's going to be the World Cup of the Cups. It's in Brazil. We love football, et cetera, which is really trying to counter some of these negative perceptions. Nonetheless, I mean, there are very legitimate concerns about infrastructure. For a long time, it was about stadiums. Are the stadiums going to be ready? This past week, it's been more about, does Brazil have other kinds of infrastructure? I've read articles saying that no one's cell phone is going to work because there'll be too many people trying to download data on their cell phones. Or there's, you know, questions of electrical outages and things like that. So those kinds of things are now coming in more to the spotlight. Security remains kind of a constant. You've always had a concern with Brazil around petty crime, around criminal elements. But, you know, since the protests started last year, I think that has become sort of the new security concern. Are there going to be large-scale protests again outside of these World Cup stadiums? And how is the government going to handle that? And how is FIFA going to handle that? And those still remain unresolved questions.
Well, they'll resolve it in a few months for sure, I suppose. We'll all be watching. Well, thank you so much, Erica, for joining me today here in Rio.
Thank you. So nice to have you here.
If you have a question or a comment for me or Erica, let us know on the Worldviews page of our website, kgou.org. You can also send us a tweet at WorldviewsKGOU or at Suzette Corlott. Coming up, Rebecca Cruz joins me for an annual conversation we always have fun with, our preview of Sunday's Academy Awards and the 5 pictures nominated for Best Foreign Language Film. I'm Suzette Grelot, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grelot. Rebecca Cruz, it's Oscar week, and as we did last year, let's run down the list of the best foreign language films that have been nominated for this year's Oscar. We've got a really interesting set of films, 5 different films that have been nominated. And the first one, let's talk about The Broken Circle Breakdown.
Will the circle be unbroken?
This is a very interesting Belgian film. It's actually from a Flemish director and Flemish actors. a drama about love and family and sorrow. I mean, just, you know, lots of pain and desperation in this film, but it all kind of comes around a bluegrass band. What do you think about this film?
Well, as you mentioned, it has a lovely soundtrack, and I think that's garnering a lot of attention, and they've gotten some awards for that as well. It seems to be a very interesting film. Yes, it's kind of a love story, but a tragic love story about bluegrass musicians that fall in love, and their daughter is born and unfortunately has leukemia, and it's about their marital struggle. And the way it's filmed is very interesting, and perhaps this is where the name comes from, because it's not in any linear sequence. So we're getting pieces that kind of come together, and the music really kind of sews it and stitches it all to a lovely movie, but a very sad and tragic movie too.
You rue the day that you were born. Forgive me, the devil, cause I wouldn't hold corn.
Yeah, I think the film really takes you through a huge range of emotions, but is really also being known for its incredible performances by these actors, especially the five-year-old that plays the daughter provides an incredible performance for somebody her age.
Yeah, I'm always impressed by the young actresses that come out during Oscar season. We seem to see this every year and just always blown away. There seems to be one or two that really is highlighted and so impressive at such a young age.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, let's talk about the front runner, actually. Next on the list is the Italian film, The Great Beauty.
Quando sono arrivato a Roma, a 26 anni, sono precipitato abbastanza presto.
This film is set in Rome and follows the life of Jep. It's a very emotional film, again, exploring kind of 40 years of his life and demonstrating really that from beginning to end, life is really fleeting. I mean, this is kind of a depressing film, but yet one that's been critically acclaimed.
Yeah, this is a kind of seen as a homage or a film following Fellini's famous La Dolce Vita from 1960. And in that film, it was kind of the 6 days of a man and all the eccentric people that he met and kind of this interesting question, do we go with the fun in life? Do we take all the adventure and the chances and not care what it costs us? Or do we settle down, that kind of human story? And so this film, a little bit different, looking at a longer span of time, an author who becomes famous after writing this book, and then it becomes his life mission to be invited to every party in Italy. So this then picks up at the end of his life as he tries to analyze, you know, was that really a worthy goal? And I think there is something very human to this. And of course, we get to see some of the interesting scenes, the very pretty scenes as he goes through this very exotic and kind of playboy-esque life.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to watch him, how he says his goal is to be the king of high life, but that he would have the power to make any party or any activity or event succeed or fail. I mean, what a goal to have. And so, but at the end, you know, very clear that we're all just kind of passing through this place we call Earth. Very, very interesting indeed.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And again, I don't think we all get to live such extravagant lives or have such a lofty goal, I suppose, as to make a party or break a party. But perhaps a good message, too, to think about what's important and what we get out of the short time that we're here.
You're listening to my conversation with Rebecca Cruz about this year's nominees for the Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film. The Oscars will be handed out Sunday evening. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. I'm Suzette Gorlot, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. I'm talking with Rebecca Cruz about the five nominees for this year's Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film. So then on to the Danish film, The Hunt. This one is really quite disturbing.
Det er min bedste venstre, det ved du godt, ikke?
Jeg tror på børnene, Lukas, det har jeg altid gjort.
the film focuses on a daycare worker that's accused of molesting a child that's in his care. And it's very clear from the outset of this film that it's a lie, that the young child has actually lied about this. She lies out of anger, but the accusations take on a life of their own. The entire town reacts violently to this, and despite the lack of evidence, he's never convicted of this crime, but he's believed by his community to be guilty, and it turns on him. The whole community that he's lived in his whole life turns on him. It's really just a devastating film.
Yeah, what an interesting topic to tackle. I mean, obviously looking at child molestation, and there are horrific cases in every country. But there are, of course, also situations where people are falsely accused. And we have seen, certainly in this country, that the evidence doesn't always matter, that this is such a serious issue that we almost always side with the victim, and that some of these accusations and gossip can really lead to hurting someone's life. It's also interesting that the main actor, Mads Mikkelsen, he was actually involved in one of the films that was nominated last year, The Royal Affair. So he's no stranger to Oscar night.
Well, let's talk about the Cambodian film. This is an interesting one, The Missing Picture.
I seek my childhood like a lost picture, or rather it seeks me.
It's a memoir of sorts of the director's life, of his childhood, you know, when he was living, he and his family were living under the Khmer Rouge and Pol Pot's dictatorship. And he kind of talks about searching for this missing picture of life between 1975 and 1979 in Cambodia.
The dye are clothes black. They change our first names. There are no individuals, only numbers.
But it's a very different approach that he takes. He uses clay figurines and actually uses the Khmer Rouge's own newsreels to kind of tell the story of torture and murder and imprisonment during this time. And it's just a very different film from all the others that are nominated.
It seems like that's what the critics are drawn to, but also pointing out, because this is somewhat unusual, that it's kind of half documentary, half claymation figures, and as you mentioned, kind of an autobiography in the same time. You know, he obviously came of age during the Khmer Rouge in the late 1970s, and we're starting to see a number of films come out of Cambodia, other countries dealing with this topic. And I think this is because we have a generation that grew up during that time, that experienced that time, that are and the whole country with these directors are trying to come to some resolution and some terms with what happened in that country. Of course, Pol Pot fled in 1979, 1980, and, you know, was never brought to trial. And even though there are now some court cases going on, we're talking 30 years later. So there really hasn't been a very satisfying resolution. And we know that through art and culture, societies are able to kind of answer some of those questions or analyze some of those issues. So a very interesting film coming out of Cambodia. We've seen a couple in the last few years that were very similar, and I wouldn't be surprised if we continue to see some in that vein.
Yeah, you can definitely learn a lot about Cambodia's history just from this film alone. Well, lastly, that leaves us with the film Omar, a Palestinian film, a drama, a romance, you know, kind of this interpretation of Palestine and its conflict with Israel, but kind of through the eyes of not just the lives that are lost literally, but those lives that are lost figuratively.
عمر لما بدك تحرر بلدك بتقرر انك تثور في ثمن لازم تدفع
شو ما كلفني الموضوع انا بدي اتجوز نادي.
It follows these Palestinian friends that are kind of torn between the war and their desire for a free Palestine, but also their desire to have families and wives and homes. And, you know, they've got their hopes and their dreams and their loyalty and all and the love for one another, and all of that really kind of being upset by the war, clearly, the conflict between the Palestinians and the Israelis. But also, it opens up them up to being vulnerable, right, to betrayal. So when one of them's caught and then they have to betray their love for their family and their friends because of the threats that are then provided, just a very deeply moving story.
Yes, deeply moving. And I think it does a very nice job of really showing the complexity of the situation. Obviously, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and ongoing conflict is incredibly complex. And we see that with the main character here and his interactions with his family, with his girlfriend and others in the film, that it's not as cut and dry as one might think. And there are many, many layers to this. Coincidentally, you know, Israel also submitted a film, and theirs was called Bethlehem, and it actually had a very similar plot line where a Palestinian is captured and forced to kind of spy on the Palestinians. So interesting that they would both have films that tackle this issue. Also, the director of the film made a point of stating that this is really significant that Palestine has been noted in this way. This gives voice to the Palestinian people, and it's their own voice. And he commented that the more we hear that voice, the more peace will be possible.
Well, clearly, these are five great films, and not all films can be nominated for an Oscar. There were some that didn't make the list. A Saudi film that has kind of been all the buzz that didn't make the cut.
Well, this year there were a record 75 countries that entered in this category, so that's pretty significant. And for the first time ever, we had over 16 films that were submitted that were directed by women, which is remarkable as well. And the film that you mention is actually one of those films. It was directed by a woman. And this is really interesting. This is the first time that Saudi Arabia has submitted a film, and they chose a film directed by a woman, Haifa El Mansour. And she directed this film about a 10-year-old girl who works really hard to buy a bicycle, which, of course, is looked somewhat down upon for young girls in Saudi Arabia. So a lot of contradictions going on there. The film has gotten a great deal of international acclaim and has been, you know, the director has been on The Daily Show. So this is definitely a film. It's called Wajja. Though it didn't make the top five and will not be getting the award at the Oscars, is definitely one that some of our listeners might want to check out.
Thanks so much, Rebecca.
Thank you.
You've been listening to my conversation with Rebecca Cruz about the five nominees for this year's Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film. The Oscars will be presented Sunday evening. You can watch the trailers for these movies on our website, kgou.org. KGOU produces Worldviews alongside the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. Nick Aguilera serves as our digital content intern this semester, and Brian Hardzinski produces the show. For Erica Rob Larkins and Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Grelott.